Hello and welcome to the Green Business Podcast, a show about climate entrepreneurs and their exciting businesses. I am your host Bharti for these weekly conversations about scaling up a climate-driven business. As more and more companies start their journeys towards net zero, there is a huge demand for solutions that can make it easy to track metrics such as carbon emissions, waste, water, etc., and report them as per Indian and international standards. My guest today is Satish Ramachandani, co-founder of UpAdapt, that caters to this growing ESG tech opportunity. It offers solutions to help companies track, measure, and report their ESG performance. Satish is a chartered accountant with extensive experience in enterprise sales and corporate finance. He spent over 7 years in CRISIL Ratings, where he headed business development of SME ratings and also social sector ratings. Then in 2020, he teamed up with his friend Mithun, who's an ESG specialist, to start UpAdapt. The company is funded by CIE Accenture Ventures. It has 50 team members and currently works with over 40 clients in India and abroad. Hi Satish, welcome to the show.
Hi Bharti, how are you? Thanks for having me over.
Yeah, wonderful to have you and looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Satish, UpAdapt reminds me of upcycling, which means that you are adding value vis-a-vis conventional way of doing things. Can you talk about the significance of the name and also how you started the company?
No, good. I think thanks for bringing a new terminology. You know, one of the ways we can describe upcycling, we never thought of that. But yeah, I mean, it's the name UpAdapt is, you know, is more of a, you know, thinking on the side of getting up and adapt, right? Mm-hmm. That was the genesis, you know, forming the one with the word UpAdapt in terms of the name of the firm and the digital solution that we have created. Mm-hmm. Right. So the story goes back about, you know, 3.5-4 years back, you know, in terms of our experiences in what's happening around the market. And Mithun, my fellow co-founder, you know, and a dear friend, you know, bases his experience also in Thomson Reuters, where, you know, he looked at over 10,000 companies, their global performances in sustainability and ESG. And then that's how, and obviously my experience on the rating side and, you know, in social sector ratings, what I did in CRISIL exposed me to the so-called ESG ecosystem, right? And here we are now, built a SaaS-based ESG solution, you know, helping businesses to track, monitor, and report the ESG performances and also support them in their net zero goals.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So I understood the ESG reporting bit. Can you now talk about how the product works?
So maybe, you know, just going back a little bit on, you know, the problem statements, what we observed, you know, a few years back. You know, top three, four. One is, you know, the ESG data being scattered across, you know, the organization, you know, in any business, whether number of plants, offices, business operations. Second is the so-called complex GHG accounting, you know, the carbon footprint accounting itself. That was a challenge, you know, from an operational perspective. Obviously, firms appoint consultants and run that process. And then the ESG landscape in terms of the standards, multiple standards, you know, companies spending enormous time and really managing that data. And then lastly, you know, the growing demand of various stakeholders, right? Whether it's investors, rating agencies, and, you know, supply chain partners, corporates, and so many others. So I think these were some of the problem statements which we saw. And about, you know, 3.5-4 years back, we had only 5,000 of the, you know, 50,000 globally listed companies actually reporting their ESG performances, right? With that problem statements in mind, you know, we created a solution, and obviously constantly we are adding very sharp features, but we have created a very comprehensive, you know, tool, a SaaS-based solution which would help any size and complexity of business, you know, to track the ESG performances, to perform carbon footprint accounting digitally, to monitor the ESG performances in terms of dashboard trends, peer benchmarking, and then obviously reporting in line with, you know, various applicable standards, whether you call it GRI, SASB, TCFD, or from a India context perspective, you know, the BRSR, which is mandatory from current year onwards.
Okay, I am happy that you talked about measuring carbon emissions. It is something, you know, that is gaining more and more prominence and also investor attention. So can you talk about your solutions around measuring GHG emissions?
So what we have done is, you know, we have right from scope 1, scope 2 to scope 3 itself, right, mapped the various ESG data points, right, across various energy sources, right. So what the company would, a client would really typically do is just record the consumption of various forms of energy, right, whether it's diesel, electricity, petrol, or various kind of energies, and we have mapped various globally accepted factors around IPCC and DEFRA, right? And this solution would digitally, you know, automatically calculate the emissions which the company really generates. So that's how we have really simplified. Obviously, you know, we could really automate the entire process in terms of how the data flows into a solution. Whether, you know, a small size company would like to manually enter the data, or another side of company which, you know, size of the company which would like to probably upload the data. But in case there are any operating system or forms are using, you know, we could get that integrated, you know, into our solution, and the data can move at a agreed schedule or periodicity, you know, as the client would like to.
Okay, so where do you take the data from? So I'm assuming there are people sitting in plant or wherever at different locations, they are entering this data. Or are you also converting accounting data or maybe supply chain data into sustainability data?
So yes, see, one is, you know, you would typically, the owner of the process, you know, sitting in at various sites or the head office, but typically, say, as you said, you know, the plant, he's the one, you know, who will have access to the data, and he's the one who's going to enter the data, or in case they're using an operating system, you know, it would flow into the solution itself. So yes, it's going to be the direct activity level data which is going to come into the solution. Though some of the parameters typically say around scope 3, for instance, you know, where the data may not be available, or you may use a surrogate or the best available data. Say, for instance, for a travel, right, you may not have some data around, say, miles traveled or something. You know, we can use a spend-based method, and, you know, the company can actually, you know, record the amount spent, and, you know, we can use that as the base, you know, to calculate the emissions.
Okay.
So primarily, yes, the data, you know, the culture of, you know, the data being recorded, you know, is something which is changing, which is needed now, which is mandatory from a reporting perspective. But to really measure your operating performance, right, you need the baseline data, and obviously for you to enhance your ESG performance, again, you need to monitor it on a regular basis. So that's the sea change which we are seeing in the market now. I mean, whether, you know, by perspective of regulatory reporting, but even, you know, by virtue of businesses interacting with their various other stakeholders, you know, whether it's investors and rating agencies and others, you know, disclosing these performances, you know, is getting imperative over time.
Okay, so you raised a very important point. What you're saying is that, okay, reporting is one thing, but other than being compliant with the reporting standards, companies have to do it because maybe their client is asking for it or their investors are demanding it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I would, you know, as we are seeing also the news around, so it's getting more fundamental to businesses, right? So beyond regulatory reporting, if you look at, you know, almost every participant in a business transaction is seeking that ESG metric of the clients or the counterparty. You know, we know private equity, the investor community itself have started looking at ESG performances of the portfolio companies, whether at a philosophy level or, you know, as per the terms which they have signed up with the LPs and the GPs, right? So we have some clients who are not listed, for instance, you know, who are not mandated by BRSR from India context perspective, but they still are using a solution, you know, to track and monitor the ESG performance, either at a philosophy level, or you know, they have requirements from their investors in that sense, you know, impacting the ability to raise funds and you know, to manage the investment itself in terms of their requirements. Yeah. Or on the other hand, you know, you would have some companies who would need to submit ESG performances to their clients because they may be their supply chain partner. You know, so we have, say, for instance, an auto ancillary client, and you know, their customers would be the large OEMs, you know, large corporates who are again looking at ESG performance of their supply chain partners. So each one of them have their own reason, and the reasons, if you look at, you know, spans across, you know, these common stakeholder, which common stakeholders rather, you know, which many of the businesses would have, either a customer, investor, regulator, rating agencies, you know, or the auditors, again, from a risk management perspective, you know, have started mapping ESG risk as part of the larger enterprise risk management framework.
Okay. So capturing emissions or capturing ESG data, it's a complex thing, right? It will vary depending on whether, let's say, you are a alternate protein company or you are a food company, then your emissions are going to be very different. If you make cheese vis-a-vis your auto ancillary, so sources of emissions are also going to be different. So even if we forget scope 3, which is not even, you know, currently we may not even need it, but even scope 1 and scope 2, the parameters are going to be very different across companies. So do you have to educate companies on how they should capture? How does your software account for industry level differences that may be there?
No, so yes, we have created a, you know, very robust taxonomy, you know, as part of a solution, and we have done that, you know, mapping at an industry level, right? So that's kind of intelligence is what we have mapped in the solution, and then, you know, from our client perspective, once we acquire a client, like, we also help them, you know, during the onboarding process, you know, of the using a solution, in terms of helping them identify which are the key ESG material issues applicable to their businesses, take inputs from them, and then, you know, help them map that in a solution. So that's how we run the process, also engaging with them, you know, in terms of our inputs, you know, given that, you know, we are a combination of ESG and tech experts, letting them know what are the key materiality issues, you know, applicable to their industry and businesses, and then accordingly, as I said, configure that in the solution and help them use a solution.
So it has to be a consulting cum software solution, right? Because first people have to understand what is important for them and how to measure them, and then maybe you can incorporate all those things into the software, and then the software can run, right?
So yes, there is an element of you know, expertise or you know, consultation, or the kind of depending again on the maturity of the client. So, you know, there are some clients who are relatively more mature on the process. It's more of, you know, the sharpness of the solution, and there are some clients, you know, we get into those discussions of helping them, you know, letting them know what are the key ESG issues applicable to their businesses.
So what is your current business model? So is it a combination of consulting fee cum software revenues?
So our current business model is purely our you know, annual subscription fees for a solution, right? And that's what we are currently running in the market. Pretty conscious business strategy, but yes, I mean, going forward, you know, a solution will also help businesses, you know, towards their net zero goals. Currently, is helping them towards their net zero goals from an analytical perspective, but there are some other, you know, features which are part of the roadmap in terms of how our solution will help, you know, our clients to execute certain programs, you know, towards their net zero goals. So that's something I think I would say, you know, keep watching this space, you know, keep track of us. And,
okay.
We'll be there.
Okay. So currently, it helps them track it and measure it, and then at some point, you'll also help them execute on that and help them consult them on reaching the net zero, right?
In some way, it could be through form of combination of, you know, digital mode with some flavor of you know, deep expertise.
Okay. And how, you know, I want to now talk about the market. So far, ESG reporting is for large, you know, top 100 companies or top 500 companies. But you mentioned that some smaller companies, unlisted companies are also buying it because investor pressures, etc. So what do you see currently when you're trying to sell it? What kind of clients are first, you know, first adopters of this solution? And then where else do you think after this first 100, 500 companies have used this, where else do you think you would be able to, you know, sell this software?
So, over 25 countries have made these, you know, ESG reporting and disclosures, you know, mandatory in nature. From an India perspective, as we all know, it's mandatory for 1,000 listed companies by market capitalization from current year onwards.
Yeah.
Right. So, yes, we are pretty sure that, you know, gradually is going to be applicable to all the listed companies. Gradually is going to be also applicable, you know, in one way or the other, you know, to create a positive impact on the P&L and balance sheet to companies, you know, which are raising money or which are, you know, have certain banking lines in terms of large borrowings, right? So the market is just going to grow, you know, in terms of the applicability to various sizes and forms of businesses, you know, as I said. So it's going to, you know, India again, for instance, you know, have committed 2070 as a net zero goal, right? So how do you really reach that? It eventually needs to get translated, you know, to various, you know, industry level policies, various policies at, you know, at government level, various, and hence then various policies, you know, at each company level. Right. So I think we are seeing that happening any which ways, you know, as I said, you know, we are seeing a huge, you know, demand from the investor side and other stakeholders in terms of looking at the ESG performances, you know, of their portfolio companies, or say lenders started gradually looking at ESG risk of their large borrowers itself. So I think it's going to spread over to multiple businesses. 1,000 listed companies, you know, for example, is a big step, you know, from an India perspective. And the entire market is sort of really pulling their socks. And the best part is that, you know, we are seeing that commitment, you know, and that kind of sponsorship at the highest level, you know, from the MD side, CEO side, from the board itself. You know. And as I said, we are pretty confident that it's going to get applicable to all the listed companies in the near future.
So, okay, I want to now talk about the other software, you know, people who may be offering, let's say, accounting software or a supply chain software. Do you think they also, you know, they could also start offering ESG services? And how difficult is it going to be for them to also, you know, already they have a client and they are already supplying other software. So how difficult is it going to be for them to start offering ESG services?
So, see, one is the way I would generally I look at things is the opportunity in the market. You know, the opportunity is huge, right? Whether in India or outside of India, it's a huge, huge opportunity. You know, trillions of funds are, you know, getting into this space by virtue of equity investments, by virtue of debt investments, right? So the opportunity is huge because sustainability is getting part of the core business strategy. It's going to be a part of the organization culture, is going to be a way of life, right? So I think the opportunity is huge for many companies to come and really innovate, for many companies to come and fulfill the aspiration and, you know, offer, you know, really beautiful and, you know, real problem solving solutions for the market. So that's point number eight. Point number two, yes, it would require certain element of you know, understanding of ESG, which I'm sure is over time, you know, we'll have more ESG professionals in the market. Currently, though, there is a little of scarcity in terms of, you know, that talent being available in the market. Firms are doing some kind of capacity building and, you know, awareness sessions, but yes, it's going to take its own time. So, yeah, I mean, you'll obviously have people coming into the space. You'll have your conventional, you know, accounting, application firm, you know, building some of the modules. But I think it's purely going to be a function of, you know, who's or how are you going to rather solve the problem statement of the market, right? Right from measurement to helping them reach their net zero goals, you know, in a seamless fashion.
And you will have an edge over any of these. So you mentioned a variety of things. So would you have any edge over any of these components?
Yeah, I think the solution which we have built, you know, we firmly believe the UI UX, you know, in terms of the ease of use, and it's pretty simple for medium sized companies also, and it's very, very powerful at the back end to manage any size and complexity of business, right? And our focus will always be the market. Our focus will always be the customer and to solve their problem statements. And I think if we are doing that, we are getting good responses from the market itself. So yeah, I mean, that's how our focus is going to be on a constant manner. So yeah, good. Hopefully, I'm sure there are other players who are watching us.
Okay. And you have 40 clients in your journey of only 15 months. So that's a big deal. How did it happen?
So yes, it started with a good product. It started with some of the initial clients really trusting us and betting on us in terms of the management team, the kind of solution which we created, right? And yes, we are a team of ambitious professionals. You know, so that kind of zest really helped us, you know, in terms of our go-to-market strategy. I think it's been a good journey, and I think the opportunity which lies ahead of us is so enormous that speed is going to be important. And obviously constantly adding the whole lot of features which we've identified, you know, in coming quarters as part of the solution.
Would it be possible for you to talk about the initial clientele, the kind of people who have used your solution, and what do you think made them buy it?
So Cipla was among the first clients, I would say. Right, a pretty complex and large size organization in that sense, and very thankful to the Chief Sustainability Officer out there. You know, Sharad was the person who was the CSO out there, right? So a pretty that experience for us was very, very useful, right, to really build some of the complex use cases, you know, into our solution, which would be really practical in nature. To plug some of the pain areas which typically a business would face in their sustainability journey. So no doubt, that experience really helped us, to sharpen the product thought process, which we had internally. And as with every different use case, from an industry perspective, from a geographic perspective, from a complexity perspective, this is just sharpening our solution with every passing day. And currently, it's so broad-based, it's so deep, that it really covers various business scenarios, most of our clients don't need to really customize what we have built. It's just like off-the-shelf product.
Okay. And lastly, Satish, if I am looking to buy a software for my ESG requirement, what are the questions that one should ask, and what are the questions that one should ask in the demo?
Okay, you're saying what is
yeah, like if it, yeah, it's a company that is looking to get a ESG software, what are the features to look for and what to ask in a product demo?
Well, it depends on really the objective of the client, but I would maybe really break the client, from a complexity and size perspective. But some of the common questions, top 3-4 would be: one is, what are the key ESG issues, applicable to my line of business?
Okay.
Right? And how is it that my solution, or how is it that UpTap is going to help them identify that? you know, especially for companies who are just starting their journey? That's got to be an important question. You know, second is how user-friendly it is and how agile it is, you know, to really take care of, you know, specific situations, you know, of the client, which purely the function of the agility of the solution, right? That becomes important. And third is, again, the scalability, you know, in terms of managing, you know, the size of operations, the number of users, the number of sites, and the commercials around those, again, becomes extremely important, right, for a business to really, you know, take care of that. And lastly is the, how do you really automate the entire process end to end? That is going to be is pretty important question, which, you know, client would ask, and rather should ask, especially large size businesses, in terms of, you know, that because they would not like to duplicate the data points which goes into the solution. They would not like to manually enter a lot of data points. Some of them is fine because, you know, by virtue of cost benefit analysis, it's good to put the data point directly at a certain frequency. But some of the, you know, huge set of data sets should go automatically in the solution, you know, by virtue of integration with any of the core systems.
Okay. So basically, one should look for software should be able to help us understand what the sustainability issues are for a particular type of company, automate as much as possible, and should be able to scale as and when the situation demands, right?
Absolutely, because see, you're using a solution from a perpetual perspective, right? You're going to use it for years coming, right? So it's important that, you know, the solution keeps on aligning to the market sustainability standards or the various reporting standards, you know, constant changing in the reporting standards. And we are a SaaS-based company, right? We are a product company. In that sense, obviously, we constantly keep a tab of what's happening in the market and keep on enhancing and sharpening our solution.
Okay. That's wonderful to know, Satish. Thank you so much for your time in this lovely conversation.
Thanks, Bharati.
Thank you for listening to the Green Business Podcast. This show is brought to you by Fintrain, an advisory firm that supports green businesses in fundraising. You can read more on us on fintrain.com. Thanks again, and see you next time.